So when we look at this fifth picture, let me get my stuff all ready here. We see that things have really changed a lot in the relationship between the ox herder and the ox in comparison to the picture that we were looking at earlier. The ox is no longer charging up to the high mountains and running down into the dark ravines, and the ox herder is no longer pulling and tugging and fighting to hang on to the ox. The rope isn't taut, but it's loose. And instead of a huge, fierce ox and a teeny, teeny, tiny ox herder, the two are a little more balanced in size. The ox is still pretty good size, but not so enormous and overwhelming. And the path looks open and wide. It's not filled with overgrowth. So all in all, it's a much more peaceful scene than the one we were looking at earlier. And so this picture, it seems, represents a stage when the ox herder has learned something about how to get along with and manage the ox much more skillfully than he or she was able to do before. So instead of trying to tame the ox through brute force, he seems to be taking a more gentle approach, showing some patience, although at the same time keeping that whip and rope handy just in case they might be needed. So in terms of our own practice, you might say that this is the stage where the practitioner has really started to learn the art of meditation and is starting to see some results from doing these practices. And this is the sense that I get from some of the commentators who discuss this picture in the ox herding series. Now, for example, the commentary that goes along with this series of pictures we're using says, the fifth picture shows that disciplined practice can overcome the bad habits of previous conditioning and bring one into accord with the true nature of reality. Although discipline is still needed because the old habits of mind still have power, living in a greater awareness of the true reality gives one energy and direction to live a wholesome life. So there's this sense here, the practice is actually starting to work. And in her article on the ox herding picture that Suze talked about earlier, not about this picture, but earlier picture, she really puts this in a very nice way, I think, that's really easy to relate to. She says, in this picture, the ox herder is gently tending the ox, and the ox is not wild anymore. They are walking alongside each other, and the ox herder is holding the rope very loosely. After having held on tight and sustained the practice for a while, it becomes easier. We are more comfortable with the sitting posture. We can sit still without feeling restless. We are not fighting our body and mind anymore. We can concentrate for a certain period of time. We've gained some quietness and clarity, which helps us in our daily lives. Any of this sound familiar? The ox herder still holds the rope loosely because he knows that although the fight is over, he must remain vigilant. We still need determination and discipline as the powers of distraction are strong. So she talks about this picture as representing a stage of maturation and ripening accompanied by care. And I think that's a beautiful way to frame our progress along the path where we're learning about practice, maturation and ripening accompanied by care. And in John Dido Laurie's book, he has a kind of a similar take on this picture. He says that at this stage, we're getting a pretty good idea of how our minds work and the kinds of things that bring up anger, greed, and fear, how our habit patterns affect our lives. So we're kind of seeing more about the mind, although our conditioned responses still arise. So he talks about this as the stage where the practice is coming together and is less of a struggle. Concentration and compassion begin to develop, but discipline is still needed. And he also talks about this as a stage of practice as one of impeccable diligence. So we're working. It's a more calm, it's quieter, it's not so much of a struggle, but we're still really putting in attention. So you see through these different commentaries that at this stage, the seeker is really learning how to apply meditation techniques more skillfully, learning how to develop concentration and steadiness of mind, maybe by focusing attention on the breath or some other object. But instead of trying to force the mind, the practitioner has learned some patience. So when the mind wanders, you know, just gently bringing it back, not getting angry or upset. Maybe he or she has started to learn about loving kindness and compassion. So instead of chastising the ox or the mind for being unruly, themselves for not being able to maintain control, they use more of a gentle touch, telling the ox, it's okay, just relax, just come back this way, maybe giving them a little gentle switch just to let them know where they're supposed to be. So, you know, learning to steady the mind with techniques like as focusing on the breath. And learning those kinds of things, the meditator then learns to apply that steadiness, not just to one object, but to changing objects, and develops the stability to stay with whatever might be arising. And I think this is a stage of practice that a lot of us will recognize and be able to relate to. And in fact, most of us spend a lot of time just in this very stage and may feel like we're just right in the middle of this whole process. We've learned or we're learning to apply different meditation techniques we've been taught in ways to help and calm and steady the mind and to work more effectively with difficult emotions like anger or craving. We know how to spend some time directing attention to the breath to calm and steady the mind. We've also learned how once we develop a certain level of concentration, we can let go of the breath and open our attention to other things arising in our awareness. The body, sounds, pleasant and unpleasant aspects, thoughts, emotions. So we move from this steady attention on one thing, building concentration, to steady attention on all these changing things, you know, from concentration to really doing a Vipassana practice. And as we do this, we begin to be really able to investigate all of the different things that are occurring in our bodies and minds and see them with some level of clarity and calm. And we also are learning about Brahmavihara practice, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, so we can be a little more kind and compassionate with ourselves and with our distracted and often difficult mind. And with this continuity of mindfulness, we see the mind starting to grow calmer, more peaceful, steadier. Steady enough maybe to begin to cope with all the wild places the mind actually can go and no doubt will go at some point in our practice. I ran across a haiku that was one of the haikus that somebody submitted for the Tricycle Haiku Challenge that I just love because it really describes this process of, you know, this experience of Vipassana so perfectly. It's by a Nancy Winkler, and she says, with its deep taproot, the dandelion stays calm as its head explodes. And I think that's a great description of our experience in practice. So just like this, the seeker is growing that deep taproot, that deep, deep taproot of calm. So whatever arises, wherever the mind might decide to take off to, wherever the ox might rush to, they can stay calm and really see and understand what's going on. So at this stage of this picture represents, you know, this kind of learning we're going through, learning and practicing all these things, developing stability of mind to see clearly and act wisely, training the mind with compassion and kindness, but at the same time, with enough structure and enough discipline so we don't just wander off to wherever and forget what we're really trying to do. And all of this is really great. And it's something that we continue to do, whether we've been practicing a few months or for many years. And I think all of you would agree that, you know, every time we go on retreat, even every time we sit down to meditate in our daily practice, we go through some of this process, you know, applying these different meditation techniques skillfully. So we can get some steadiness of mind, we can draw our attention in, we can let go of some of the distractions of the day, so we can actually pay attention and see clearly what's going on. So this is a really important and great phase that we're seeing in this picture. But, but we also need to remember that this is only the fifth picture of this series. And we still have five more pictures to go. So clearly, you know, we're making some progress here, but we're not there yet. Things might be a lot more manageable than they were in the previous picture, but we are not all the way to enlightenment. And as it says in the poem, the ox follows untethered sometimes, but it's still prone to wander and needs to be brought back under control. And we notice that the ox herder feels like he still needs to hang on to that rope and whip, even if he only uses them just occasionally, sparingly. As some of the commentators I quoted said, at this stage, the ox isn't fully tamed. So you might see, so there's that part. Portion of the ox not being fully tamed, and you might also notice that in this phase where we're definitely more skillful and gentler with the ox, it isn't exactly a stage of total relaxation. As I mentioned before, John Dido Laurie describes this stage as characterized by impeccable diligence. And Martine Batchelor talked also about vigilance, and this is a good word to apply to this stage. So the ox herder is looking back at the ox, you know, not without kindness, but still he's kind of checking things out, you know, making sure how the ox is doing, making sure he's not showing signs of bolting or wandering off some dusty road. So the ox herder is very much in the picture, very involved in this task of taming and leading the ox, and with very clear ideas about what the ox ought to be doing and what he shouldn't be doing and where he should be going and where he shouldn't be going. And I think this is kind of the way our minds are in this stage of practice, watching carefully to make sure that our minds don't go too far astray. So it's just like the ox herder. We're very much right in the center of our practice. We're identified with it. We're involved in doing it. And our viewpoint is kind of like something like, I'm the meditator. I'm getting more skillful in applying these techniques. I'm learning. I'm getting to the point where I can stabilize and direct the mind at least somewhat. Little by little, I'm beginning to feel more calm and more steady. So, you know, very much a sense of doing this practice. And we're definitely aiming for results at this stage. A calm and peaceful mind, you know, maybe the ability to sit longer without getting restless. To stay with the breath. Maybe we're aiming for deeper concentration states or insights we've heard about or read about. And our feeling is that we just have to keep working to get better at this, so we can make the ox or the mind do what we think it ought to be doing all the time. But in fact, the problem we have in this stage and at this picture, and the reason why we're not all the way to the end of this series, isn't just that the ox isn't fully tamed. And we have more work to do, more taming to do. There's something else that's a little bit off here too. And we sense this in the commentary on this picture that is in the Three Pillars of Zen, which I always want to come back to. And this commentary is quite a bit different from the others, and it's a little puzzling and confusing. And it says, with the rising of one thought, another and another are born. Enlightenment brings the realization that such thoughts are not unreal, since even they arise from our true nature. It is only because delusion still remains that they are imagined to be unreal. This state of delusion does not originate in the objective world, but in our own minds. So you may kind of wonder, well, where is this coming from? And I myself, I'm not totally sure, but I think what the commentator is trying to say is making a reference to the fact that in this picture, there's still duality. The meditator is making a distinction between the thoughts that need to be quieted and tamed and our true nature, and between himself and the ox. And this is a distinction that later in the journey he will come to see as a delusion. But at this point, the understanding isn't complete. You know, we're really not there yet. And so, of course, there is some delusion. So at this stage of our practice, even though we're definitely more skillful, in many ways, you might say that we're still using our old attitudes of mind. We're still in a kind of accomplishment and self-improvement mode. And just naturally, we identify with our meditation practice, feel like our meditation is a project we're doing and a skill we're learning and a set of goals we're trying to achieve. We're the meditator. We're calming and training the mind. And thinking back about the poem about the dandelion, we're definitely developing that deep taproot of calm and steadiness. But we may not be so comfortable with this idea that our head might explode. You know, our idea is probably more that we're practicing so our head is never going to explode. You know, we want to be able to get to this calm and tranquil place and just stay there. And we'd like to think that at this point, or as we get a little bit further along at this point, our investigation of dukkha is over. When actually, when we get some calm and steadiness, our investigation is really only just beginning. And all of this is totally understandable. You know, unless we've gone through these stages, we don't really know any other way. We naturally see our practice in terms of progress towards goals we're hoping to achieve. And we continue to think of it that way. And I think no matter what teachers tell us, we continue to think of it that way. At least that's how I feel from my experience, until we really start to feel the limitations of that attitude within ourselves. If any of you were at Ajahn Sumedho's talk last month, you might remember he talked about this whole issue and how the desire for spiritual attainment or the desire to get rid of these different hindrances and defilements is a very wholesome desire in a lot of ways, but it's still desire and it's still suffering to have that desire. And when our minds are on what we're hoping to achieve, even if it's something really good and wholesome, we aren't really present for what's actually happening. So even these desires, if we're identified with them, eventually have to be let go of. But in this picture, I don't think this has happened yet. And at least I know in my case, it can take a long time for us to really get that understanding or even have a clue about what that understanding means. Our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, used to talk about this issue over and over again. And I remember sometimes I felt so frustrated with him because I was looking for advice on how to make progress or get over some problem I had identified in my practice. I didn't want to hear what he was saying. And it didn't dawn on me for a long time that It wasn't lack of progress that was the problem, but this wanting itself, this identification itself that was the source of the difficulty. So it was my attitude, really, that was the source of difficulty. And it took going through a fair amount of pain and frustration to be able to see that. And even now, when I have a little understanding about this, I still find it's very easy to forget it. And before I know it, I've fallen back into old ways of thinking, and I'm hoping for this to happen, or waiting for this to happen, or wondering why this or that hasn't happened. So it's not easy to see through these delusions of self and duality and seeing our practice as a project we're undertaking and that we're in control of. And the only way we really come to see this is by just continuing our practice, just as we've been taught, you know, noticing the sensations of the breath, the coming and going of various objects, what's going on in our body and mind, doing the techniques we've been taught, until that understanding comes for us. So let's really honor this place that this picture illustrates, where we're working diligently at our practice, we're being vigilant about noticing where the mind is going, we're gradually seeing how it grows calmer and steadier and clearer. You know, just as the poem says, properly tended, the ox becomes clean and gentle and willingly follows its master. But even as we see this, knowing too that there's still more to this journey. So let's sit together for a few moments to kind of settle. And I'd like to close with a poem by Zhu Yun, Searching for the Dharma. You traveled up 10,000 steps in search of the Dharma. So many long days in the archives, copying. The gravity of the Tang and the profundity of the Sum make heavy baggage. Here, I picked you a bunch of wildflowers. Their meaning is the same, but they're much easier to carry. So thank you for your attention, for being here. And now we'll have some time for the small group discussion. Okay, here everybody is back. Welcome back to the big group. So now we have some time, as usual, for our sharing in our larger group for any comments you might have about what you talked about in the small groups, questions, thoughts, whatever is coming up for you. And you can use your little hand sharing, raise hand function, so we know who would like to speak. And I'll be happy to hear for anybody that has something to say. So, okay, first up, Sean and Bruce. I don't know which of you it is, but whoever would like to speak, please go ahead.
Okay, well, it'll be Sean first. I don't know if Bruce is going to chime in. A lot of what we talked about in our group was loving kindness and compassion. And for me, I have had a difficult time with the ropes and the whips and all of that and these pictures and the beating into submission and that type of energy. And when I look at this picture, well, first of all, I see that the ox and the yogi are looking at each other and they're facing each other. But beginning to see, it started last time with the ox, is I just see a lot of compassion coming from this ox. And the ox is just basically kind of placating the yogi. Okay, you can have this little teeny tiny rope around my neck if that makes you feel better, that I'm not going to just dash and run away or whatever I'm going to do. But it's really not necessary. And I think that's the, I mean, in the beginning of practice, there was a lot, I guess the ropes and, represent training, the training of the mind, and which is, was necessary and good in the beginning. But I'm finding now that if I go about it with that energy, of making some part of me submit, then I'm just all rolled up in some big mess. And the best thing I can do is just be, accept and be with what's going on and apply loving kindness and compassion to myself. Beating myself into submission just never really, really works. So that's kind of where I am. I see the ox really more as the true self that's just for me, not against me. The mind's not against me either. It's just the mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think I know a lot of people have issues with that same thing, the words about the whip. Especially the, maybe the rope, not so much because, you know, you need to lead an ox. But, I think what you're saying actually is part of what's being learned in this is to apply that kindness and compassion. And that a whip isn't needed, that some discipline is needed, some training, maybe some boundaries, but they can be applied with kindness. And I think some of what you were talking about too, about trying to make the mind go a certain way doesn't work, is sort of a this deeper understanding that seeing our practice as some kind of problem we're going to solve or something that we're going to accomplish and make happen doesn't really work. We just, as you were saying, have to accept where we are with kindness and just see what's going on. So yeah, thank you. I'm not sure. In this picture, some of the allusions to the whip and the rope might also be an illustration of the mindset of the ox herder. Not that they necessarily are needed exactly, but that's how the ox herder feels at that time from their somewhat limited point of view. So yeah, thank you. I think your comments resonate with many of us. Suze?
Two things. One is that Tim last week said that he was going to add some of that kind of commentary to his next talk because there were a bunch of comments about that. So I'm looking forward to how Tim is going to reframe the whip and the rope part. Mm-hmm. In our group, we talked a lot about dukkha. A lot about the stuff that is just hard to deal with. And for me, in the picture is in the middle of the day, and in the night, the ox is just off running wild. So I don't need to say much more, but that was, you know, it's hard to find the practice sometimes in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm. Nothing. Yeah, it really, really is. I mean, I think that's why I love that haiku about the dandelion with the deep taproot, because it's not saying that our mind is not going to explode. It will, but we have that deep taproot so we can find at least some place of calm. And, you know, I'm wondering this issue of dukkha, I'm not sure that in these Zen ox herding pictures, they totally deal with the issue of investigation of dukkha in the same way that our tradition does. Mm-hmm. So we may find that there are things that are sort of left out. You know, I'm not sure, but it might be as we go along.
My talk at the last Sunday of the month is going to be on dukkha. So maybe I had planted a seed unconsciously that that's what I'm experiencing. So I'll have plenty to talk about in a couple weeks.
Yeah, there's a lot in this picture. I have a question here from Lauren. I mean, that's in the chat about the rest of my reflections. I'm a little bit unsure of what you mean.
Actually, that was to a person in our breakout group. And I was just asking, she got cut off and she was saying something.
Okay, good, good. Because I was like, what?
Yeah, no, it was for her. So if she wanted to finish it in the chat, she could, or just for her to know that we were curious about what she was going to say. So that's all.
Thank you,
Terry, for putting in.
Yes, thank you, Terry. Now I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Thank you.
And any other comments or anything that anyone has to share? Maybe time for one more before I hand it over to Suze to conclude if anybody has anything. Peter.
Yeah, well, really, all I'm saying is actually Susan was in our group and was beginning to say something really interesting about the many versions of the oxidizing picture. So if you're up for sharing it orally now, that'd be awesome to hear, Susan. That's all I have to say.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's different versions of the poems and there's definitely different versions of the commentaries. I don't think the pictures are all that different. And some of the commentary.
I'm sorry. I've been sort of lurking in the background for the last 6 months or so.
Oh.
Anyway, so when the series first came up, I just went out and looked for oxidizing pictures and found quite a few different artwork versions. And what I was just starting to say, and I don't know how interesting it is, but is that I just love this particular set. I mean, the artist just put so much character into the ox and into the ox herder. Many of the others are kind of, I would say, more cartoonish, whereas these just have, it's like there's so many extra layers to the expressions of the ox and the ox herder. And kind of the dynamic in between them and, you know, different ways you could see what might be going on inside them and so on and so forth. I just think it's a beautiful set of pictures. That was all.
Thank you. And I'm sorry I got confused about who was asking who, what, and which Susan you were talking about, et cetera, et cetera. So thank you, Susan. That was,
That's
great. Thank you. And now I think I had better turn the floor over to Suze for our announcement.